Merrill Kelly, Diamondback starting pitcher, joining us at 9:15.
What is this? What is this right here? It's so good.
Paul, I should have known I got in the way of that.
Oh, man.
Wait a minute. What's going on here? You're saying Merrill Kelly's coming up?
Merrill Kelly's at 9:15 this morning, yeah. Okay. But Wolf and Music is right now, obviously. Yep.
I see.
Paulie, do you recognize this, Paul? I mean, I know you are crunk. Do you recognize this music right here, Paul?
I'll be honest with you, I had to pot it down. I didn't hear the ball off the top.
Okay. All right. I'm going to send it to you later, okay? Because I like it. All right, here we go, man.
Okay, I wasn't going to get in the way twice.
Here we go, Paul.
I was taking a knee on that. One of the things that's interesting about training camp getting underway yesterday within the coronavirus world, when training camp is basically testing and virtual meetings and things, is Cliff Kingsbury, you would think as a second-year coach, has such a disadvantage coming from the college ranks as so many other coaches who are so used to having training camp. This was supposed to be the first training camp where the head coach, Cliff Kingsbury, can kind of see how his adjustments work. Okay, I've already done one NFL training camp as a head coach now. Now, here's what I wish I would have done differently, so now I'm going to put those adjustments in place and see how those adjustments work. And yet Cliff Kingsbury said something when he was asked about the schedule, and it was basically, yeah, well, this is our plan for now.
Everything is fluid. I've never seen so many schedule changes as we've kind of gotten information and figured things out and tweaked things here and there. And so it's I mentioned earlier, nobody's ever been here before. We're all doing our best to work through it and do what's best for this organization. It may not look the same, you know, at all 32 places, but I think each team is going to try to figure out the best answer to stand healthy and have the most successful season they can have.
He seems to have a handle on all the changes, you know.
I think it was the Lions who it was Matt Patricia who came out, and at this point he has not one, but I think two pencils behind each ear. And because he came out and said, you know what, our COVID protocol handbook, our COVID manual is actually thicker than our playbook. No joke. There are more pages. There's more verbiage. And then you had Dr. Alan Sills this morning on ESPN, and he went through everything, and it's daunting.
Yeah,
there's no doubt. It is daunting, and you got to get everyone on the roster and all the staffers who are close to the operation, and everybody's going to have to adhere to all these protocols. We can only hope that what just happened with the Marlins is the wake-up call the NFL needed to follow the rules.
Yeah, that's a good point, Paulie, overall. But once again, this is going to be a fascinating training camp because I wonder what Cliff Kingsbury's going to do and how he's going to prepare this team, right? You've got this talented team. Stop and think about it. Is the 2020 Arizona Cardinals roster more talented than it was last year, Paulie?
I'd say it's the most talented roster since 2016.
Ding, 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 Paul. You win the prize right there. Yeah, I would agree with that. And it's so fascinating to me because you take last year's roster, and if you're Cliff Kingsbury, forget about him being a first-year head coach. You got a rookie quarterback, and you've got a lot of question marks. That's what you had talent-wise. So are you going to approach training camp a little bit different when you have that kind of roster as opposed to a quarterback you know can play, even though he's got to get better and get a lot better? You know he can play, and you've got talents all over the place, offensively and defensively. Are you going to prepare that team differently than what you would have prepared last year's team?
I don't care if that's a rhetorical question or not, Wolf. I'm going to answer that question.
Yes.
Look what happened in 2016. Do you think Bruce Arians thought back on that preseason and that training camp and said, man, maybe I shouldn't have taken it so easy?
He did, Paul.
Maybe I shouldn't have looked immediately to the regular season. I have a team that went 13-3 and coming off an NFC Championship game loss, and we think we're better than we were the year before.
Yes.
Yet, as you said, Doug, Camp Cupcake, let's just be ready to go in the regular season. NBA style, we'll be ready to go, and we'll flip the switch. And it never happened. They came out of the gates with a disappointing loss to Jimmy G and the Patriots, and they never recovered.
And that is the conundrum that every head coach faces when you've got a talented team.
You know, there's another point here, Wolf, that's a little deeper. I'm assuming Cliff Kingsbury went into 2019 training camp thinking, how much 9-on-7 backs-on-backers do I really need to do, because we're going to be in 10 personnel 70% of the time?
True. True.
Now he's going into a training camp where he has much more embraced 10 personnel as part of an NFL offense overall picture. So I'm not going to be air raid all day.
Correct.
And that alone would make camp a little more physical, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it. Again, listen, they're coming into this camp, and a known commodity is going to be huge. Is DeAndre Hopkins a known commodity? Yes, he is, right? Is Kenyon Drake a known commodity? Well, to the Arizona Cardinals, they believe that he is. Is Christian Kirk, is Larry Fitzgerald a known commodity? Yes, this offensive line got so much better, played so much better last year than anybody thought they were capable of doing. And is Kyler Murray a known commodity? There's no doubt about that. And then when you look at the defensive side of the ball and the improvements on the defensive side of the ball, it still may not be your strength, Basinonians, because that offense, I believe, is going to light it up. That's going to be the strength. But you've got these known commodities. What are you going to do? How much are you going to hit? Those are my questions.
You know, Doug, on the most recent edition of the Big Red Rage, we had on the esteemed Dave Pasch. Thank goodness we did. Wolf was unprepared. He was underwhelming, as usual. So we had Pasch on, and he made the following point, that if you don't have to worry about preseason games, then does that actually help Cliff Kingsbury and Kyler Murray become more regular season ready, because you're not wasting time in camp installing some fake, faux, vanilla offense that you never intend to run in the regular season? Think of how much time they wasted a year ago trying to disguise everything. And then they came out in the first half against the Lions. Speaking of underwhelming, they were pretty much like Wolf on the Big Red Rage, maybe the worst half of offensive football. And then, you know, I think they all regretted doing that. Well, now you don't have to worry about any of that. There's no disguising. There's going to be no fans in attendance. There's no potential fan with a rogue cell phone posting your offense up to the internet. It's all behind the scenes, and you can do whatever you need to do to get regular season ready from the get-go. Does that actually help a Cliff Kingsbury and Kyler Murray be more lethal when you start against the Niners?
I can see that. I just think a coach that's that creative, that's had that much time to watch high school Texas plays and college plays that he liked all of last year, and then to implement them slowly into this extended preseason to make sure you, man, I think this could be a massive explosion. Coming up next, speaking about explosion, boy, Merrill Kelly, did the Diamondbacks need that? We're going to have Merrill Kelly join us live from Texas to talk about his 7 2/3 innings pitched next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Doesn't get much more local than this. Scottsdale, Prescott, and Tempe for high school, JUCO, and college, and now he's an Arizona Diamondback. Merrill Kelly, who was nice enough to join us last year, does it again. He just called in from Texas, where the Diamondbacks were a winner 4-1, and it had a lot to do with his performance, 7 2/3 innings pitched last night, right when they need it. Merrill, thanks for the enjoyment you gave us all last night. How you feel today?
I'm pretty tired, but I'm feeling pretty good.
You know what,
Merrill? Thanks for having me, as always, guys.
No, absolutely, Merrill. Really, really appreciate it. Listen, when you're pitching well, are you thinking your way through the process, or are you just feeling it?
You know, obviously there are some thoughts, you know, just kind of game plan-wise, if anything, just kind of the stuff that we discussed before the game with Voter and Hergy, just how we're going to attack guys. But once you get in that mode, it's kind of, you know, you call it in the zone or whatever you want to call it. You try to just go off field as best you can. I think when you start thinking too much out there, that's when you start getting in trouble.
I can't imagine how much you guys get driven crazy when the media asks you the same question. But I want to ask you something that you were asked last night, because it just hit me right in the face. And there's a lot of fans that might not have heard it yesterday. But you were asked, what's the difference between the 2019 Merrill Kelly and the 2020 Merrill Kelly? And you got pretty deeply introspective, and it shows your humbleness that you were so open on what's different. And I want to give everybody the chance to hear that. That's why I'm asking you the same question. What has changed for you this year?
You know, kind of just piggybacking on what I said last night, I think the majority of it is mental. You know, as far as my ability, I think that's always been there, but I think I kind of just didn't allow myself to show it last year. You know, I was thinking a lot of thoughts on, you know, I'm the new guy. I'm the guy they signed from Korea. You know, I'm trying to get used to, you know, all the guys in on my team, and also trying to get used to all the hitters that I'm trying to get out. You know, I think I got caught up in the idea that I was in the big leagues rather than, you know, just kind of being where my feet are and knowing that I belong here and that I can compete here and that I can get these guys out, and that I am part of this team. And I got to give a ton of credit to my guys on my team. You know, just the level of comfortability I have walking into the stadium every day is night and day from last year. So I got to hand it to those guys and as well as the coaching staff for, you know, helping me navigate through last year and, you know, not giving up on me and keep pushing me to be, you know, what, you know, kind of all came to fruition last night. And in my mind, that's, you know, that's how I should pitch every day. Obviously I'm not going to take a no hitter into the seventh every or into the eighth every day, but yeah. In my mind, you know, that's kind of what I expect from myself. And I always have. And I think this year that I'm finally allowing myself to, I guess, get out of my own way.
Merrill, that is an awesome answer right there. For a guy that played 10 years in the National Football League, I can tell you right now, humility is a wonderful master when you compete at the highest level our species can generate. Have you always been a humble guy?
I don't know. I mean, I guess you'd have to ask the people around me. I mean, I guess I would consider myself a humble guy. You know, I'm in my mind, I'm just a guy who can do something, you know, pretty well. But, you know, just because you're in the big leagues or just because you're in the situation that you are doesn't mean that you're, you know, any better than the next guy on the team. And I think if anything, last year, that's what I thought. I thought that I was not as good as everybody on the team. I thought I was not as good as the league. And I think that kind of showed in my performance. And I kind of let myself go down that road. But at the end of the day, what we do is special. I'm not taking anything away from that. I mean, there's only a certain amount of people that get to play professional baseball, much less actually make it to the big leagues. But at the end of the day, you know, when baseball's over, you know, I'm still just Merrill Kelly. You know, I'm not Merrill Kelly, the major leaguer. I'm not Merrill Kelly, the baseball player at the end of the day.
Amen.
I'm just, you know, I'm just a guy who's, you know, just trying to work hard on what I do.
You know, listening to you say that, I'm going to bring up a name that there's no way you grew up here without knowing this name very well. But that those are comments like Shane Doan would make. And
okay.
when we had Doaner on the show about a year ago or something, he was not talking about you at all, but he was talking about the difference between young teams and veterans teams. And he said, you have to understand, a young guy, he wants to win. He wants to beat the other team. But his main focus is just staying up, is just staying with the big club. And he a young guy is constantly looking at his own roster, making sure, uh-oh, that guy's starting to do better than me. Uh-oh, I need to do this. And you get away from just do your job beating the other team. And listening to your answer right there and what you just said to Wolf, did a little of that happen last year? And now it's, hey, my job is to get the Twins out, and that's all I'm worried about.
Yeah, for sure. You know, Doaner actually came out and spoke to us during spring training. It was really cool listening to his story. It's just really cool listening to how he kind of handles, you know, his role on the team. Obviously, he's been doing it forever, so obviously guys look up to him. But his biggest thing that he kind of preached to us was just respect, you know, and just respect the guys in your clubhouse. And at the end of the day, you know, you got to respect yourself as well. So I think last year there was a little bit of doubt and a little bit of kind of uneasiness, like you said, kind of looking over my shoulder and, you know, wondering what this guy's doing or what this guy's thinking, rather than just, you know, what you touched on there at the end. Is at the end of the day, it's all about just getting people out.
You know, Merrill, you think about it. You took the ball. Your team was 1-3, a very critical series against the Padres. And I know I say critical, a four-game series in a 60-game season. It's just ridiculous. But you take the ball. How much pressure did you feel going into last night's start?
You know, I don't know if pressure is the right word. You know, I think each of us do a good enough job of putting enough pressure on ourselves, if not, you know, too much at sometimes. But I was definitely aware of where we were at, and I knew that San Diego obviously didn't go the way that we wanted to, and we didn't get out the gates as hot as we would have liked. So I knew after those tough games in San Diego that I knew we needed a big boost, you know, not just as pitching staff-wise, you know, try to give the bullpen a little bit of a break. But just as far as morale and just momentum, I knew that yesterday was a big game, even though, like you said, it is early in the season, but, you know, like you said, with the 60 games, every game matters. So going into last night, I was definitely aware of how big of a game it was, and I knew we needed a big start.
This is Diamondback starter Merrill Kelly. Diamondbacks are taking on the Rangers today in Game 2 of the series, and you can hear it on ESPN 620 a.m. at 1 o'clock. Merrill, I'm wondering about, listen, you know how special it is to be a Major League Baseball player, but you've earned everything you've ever received from this game, being a 37th round pick and going to Korea as well. I mean, you fought like crazy to get here, yet how tough is being on the road in a coronavirus world where there's supposed to be team chemistry bonding in the gas lamp district? You guys are all supposed to go out and get barbecue last night after your big win and enjoy a Dallas nightlife, and yet it's masks on, room only, room service. It's maybe for five games that's all right, but you're going to be doing this for 2 months. How do you stay mentally sharp in a world that you've never been in?
Yeah, it's definitely strange. You know, the testing every other day and all the protocols and all the hoops that we kind of have to jump through, it definitely makes it tough. You know, everywhere we've been, or at least San Diego so far and here in LA that we had those exhibition games, because of the social distancing, we're kind of all spread out. We're in, you know, there's a couple different clubhouses, you know, so people are kind of everywhere and they're kind of on their own schedule just because of the nature of the beast. So it's been interesting. It's been definitely some tough waters to tread so far. But I think, you know, once we get in the swing of things, and I think as we get this thing rolling, I think it'll kind of all fade away. I think it'll just become kind of normal for what it is now. You know, hopefully moving forward next year, things can get back to normal. But it's definitely been a little strange. I think the biggest aspect, especially during summer camp, was the fact that, you know, they didn't want us around the field for a long amount of time. So we just kind of just get in, get your stuff done, and when you're done, get out. So there'd be days where you'd go with maybe not even talking to somebody. So that part has been interesting. But like I said, I think once we get rolling and really get in the swing of things, I think it'll just become kind of what it is.
You know, Merrill, when I was playing, I was a wedge buster. Do you know what that is? Right? Yeah, you're
old. I don't. I'm not a big football guy. So
I
apologize. I don't know that term.
Oh, don't worry about it. They used to line up three or four 300-pound guys in front of the kickoff return guy. It was a wedge. They would stand shoulder to shoulder. Somebody had to go into that wedge, right? Somebody had to take that out. That's what I did. Anger and intensity was really, really good if you wanted to be a wedge buster. It was really good.
That for sure.
What about pitching? Is anger and intensity good for you personally when you pitch?
Intensity, yes. I would say anger, no. You know, everybody's got their own kind of way to pump themselves up, and everybody's kind of got their own way of getting locked in. For me, I try to stay as calm as possible. As calm as possible with being aggressive and having intent, I guess is the best way to put it. I find when I start getting angry and, you know, I let my emotions kind of run wild, you know, I start maybe throwing pitches a little harder than I should and location takes a hit, or, you know, I try to make this curveball really, really nasty and I end up just spinning it and it ends up just kind of coasting in there. So for me, you know, the music I listen to, the stuff I do all before the game is just try to get me in, I guess you'd call it that quote unquote zone, you know, that people talk about in sports. But for me, I try to take the anger and try to stay as calm as I possibly can.
In a coronavirus world, do you even know if you're being ignored during a no-hitter? Like, did everybody avoid you because of the no-no, or is it just it's coronavirus, nobody's near you anyway?
I honestly didn't notice too much of it. I will say as the game went on, there were definitely, now that I think, go back and think about it, there were definitely less people around me, as we went on, than at the beginning of the game. There's less people talking to me for sure. But at the time, I don't think I really noticed that. I was just kind of locked into what I was doing. I knew I hadn't given up any hits, but I was trying not to really acknowledge it. I didn't really want to think about it too much because same concept, you know, when you start thinking about that type of stuff, you stop losing conviction and motivation on each and every pitch.
Yeah, but I can tell you, it shows a lot about who you are as a man, the way you pitched after the home run. I mean, it's got to be tough after you give up a no-hitter, and to a good hitter like Odor, there's no shame in giving up a home run to him, but the way you fought, it was like you didn't, there was nothing, it didn't appear on television that it affected you at all losing a no-hitter.
Yeah, I mean, I think that goes back to what we were just talking about with preparation as far as, you know, emotions and staying calm. It was one pitch. It was a decent pitch. It was a little up. He put a good swing on it. It sounds cliche, but, you know, once that ball leaves our hand, we don't, you know, our control is done. So I could have gone the other way. I could have gotten mad and could have gotten pissed off and, you know, thought all kinds of crazy thoughts in my head, but honestly, what was going through my mind was just give me the ball, and I want to get back on the mound and get the next guy out.
So, Merrill, Matt Hergis is a friend of mine, okay? He's a buddy of mine right here. Did you call him Hergie?
I did.
Is that his nickname? Is that what they call him?
I think. I mean, that's what I've kind of always called him. That's what everybody says around, that's a around here, nickname. Yeah.
All right, I'm walking up to him the next time I say, hey, Hergie. What's going on?
Hergie.
What's interesting about this to me,
Hergie.
Merrill, is the fact that
H-E-R-G-I-E.
We just found this out that he's a friend of Wolf's, and he's been the pitching coach now for 5 months, 7 months. We've never had him on the show, and Wolf just now lets us know that he's friends
he's
with
now
him.
Now dropping this,
yeah, of course. It's typical Wolf. Okay. It's what life is like, Merrill.
I like how he just slid that in there too.
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah, by the way, he's my friend.
But Merrill,
yeah, we've got stuff like that for Wolf. Whenever he does something like that, we always call him name dropper.
We would love for you to come back on. We'd love for that. If in fact you had walk-up music, what would it be?
Last year it was Return of the Mac by Mark Morrison. I'm still mulling over what it's going to be this year. I'm considering changing it.
Okay.
But I'm not sure which direction I'm going
to
go yet.
Listen, we would love to have you back right here, okay? And
we'll
every time you come back, we're going to play your walk-up music.
Good to talk to you,
that worked for me.
You were fantastic yesterday. Congratulations. We'll see you.
Thanks, Merrill.
Thanks again.
Merrill Kelly, Diamondback, Scottsdale guy, Yavapai County guy, and ASU Sun Devil. Pretty cool. And his performance was exactly what the Arizona Diamondbacks needed. Coming up next, I was not paying a bit of attention. I'm just so excited of how entertaining he was. 90 players into the NFL Top 100, and yet there's one Cardinal not on the list. It's coming up next on 98.7 FM, one specific Cardinal. 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Good morning, it's Doug and Wolf. Wolf Baron Maloney are in the Auction Community Studios. Paul and I are both in our homes. Paul's call is coming up in about 5 minutes as I take personal responsibility for butchering the clock, as we call it in the business.
That's three, Doug Lace, not five.
What's five?
Nothing.
Okay.
Proceed.
All right. I did. That one actually did totally go over my head. I'm amazed at Patrick Peterson not being on the top 100 list. And I don't mean that in the sense that he deserved it. I obviously, if it's just designed to rank who had the best season last year, then I really stare at the players and I wonder how much football players watch.
Yeah.
I do, because yeah. Chandler Jones doesn't make it last year, and there's so much crap given to players for not voting for him. He jumps all the way up to 15 this year. And then, yet Patrick, they paid attention to Patrick because I don't think he should be in the top 100. I won't stand on the table for him. I would have put him in the 90s, but I won't stand on the table for him. But I do think this is a big deal if you're a Cardinals fan, because not what you think where Patrick Peterson belongs, how Patrick Peterson will take the snub is why this is a big story.
Oh, there's no doubt about it, Douglas. I think Pat P, based on what means, is going to have an awesome year. I really do. I mean, going into this year right now, he's going into a contract year. He's got Robert Alford on the other side of him, which means he's going to get more opportunities. It's not like they're just going to pick on Robert Alford the whole time because he's pretty doggone good as well. So now he's going to get more opportunities to make plays out there. People are whispering that Patrick Peterson has lost it. He's coming off a bad season. He had a lot to do with that. He's got a scheme that is going to suit his strengths. All of this comes together. This beautiful confluence of prove it comes together for Pat P. And I think he's going to have an awesome season.
And now, it all comes together in a contract.
Yes. And Dougley's now with the proverbial cherry on the top, this disrespect by players, by his peers. He's not even in the top 100.
No, and then to double down on it, if you remember at the time where Richard Sherman signed a big contract and people talked about him about being the best corner in the game, and Richard Sherman made a bunch of comments and says, hey, if you think it's Pat P, look at our interceptions here. And so there's been a rivalry, friendly or not, between him and Richard Sherman throughout their tenure in this division. And now Richard Sherman comes in at 28.
Yeah.
You're not even ranked, Patrick, and he's 28. I bet in a no-fan environment, and we don't know whether fans can attend Cardinals games yet, but in a no-fan environment, I think you're going to hear an on-field mic pick up Patrick Peterson breaking up a pass and yelling, top 100, or get my vote, or you know, some kind of trash talk every time he makes a play. You're going to hear Patrick Peterson talking about the top 100.
Yeah, no doubt. With all the motivation that Patrick Peterson has right now going into this season, the one-year contract, like I said, right, and now this slight right here, with all the motivation that he has, the Cardinals are either going to sign Pat P to an extension because he's going to blow it up and have this awesome year, or if they don't, what does that say? And what will the rest of the league think? I mean, this is going to be really interesting to watch, right? Because they're going to go ahead. You know the Cardinals would love to sign him to an extension if he goes out and suddenly he's Pat P all over again. But if he doesn't, with all the motivation, with all the stars that are aligned right now, what does that say if he doesn't have a good year?
If you put everything that's happened to Patrick Peterson in his entire NFL life and change two words, Arizona Cardinals, to something like New York Giants, this is the number one. This is probably the number three story in the NFL. Obviously, Tom Brady's right there. But this is such an enormous story if it was any other franchise to have all that confluence of situations. And for Patrick Peterson, a borderline Hall of Fame player who now is questionable for next year, in a sense, of how much he's going to get paid.
Oh, he's going to go off.
Yeah.
That's my prediction.
It's a big deal. Coming up next, Paul's Call tries to find out if this version will be ranked in the top 100. That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Paul's Call is brought to you by Brooklyn Bedding. For the best sleep ever, go to brooklynbetting.com.
Hey, it's your call, man.
No, it's your call.
No, it's your call.
No, it's your call.
Hey, nitwits, it's Paul's Call.
A week ago today, Buster Olney called it.
Banging a trash can to let the hitter know what pitch was coming.
Buster looked into his crystal baseball, and he still said, you know what, there'll still be blood.
I drink your milkshake.
Forget the COVID protocols. Teams will still throw at the Astros.
So I do think that the conversation about any Astro who gets hit is going to continue.
Give the man a ding because last night,
I drink it up.
The Dodgers' Joe Kelly throws a 3-0 fastball behind Alex Bregman.
Balls get away sometime, you know, but not that many in the big leagues.
Fishy, fishy.
And there's Dusty on the errant breaking ball that then came later over the head of Carlos Correa.
What really enraged everybody is when, you know, he told Carlos, I mean, he struck him out. He told him, nice swing. See, what are you supposed to do then?
Dusty Baker says that Joe Kelly yelled, nice swing, B.
The price is wrong, B.
And Dusty wasn't down with that.
And then what upset me is that the umpires warned us. why don't you warn him? You know, he's the one throwing the ball, and, you know, he's the one that started this mess in the first place.
Of course, as Joe Kelly admits, with no fans in the stands, you can pretty much hear all the chirping.
Yeah, no fans, so it's fun. It's a little bit more competitive that way. I like it. Something apparently they didn't take too kind to, but so it is what it is.
And then when Joe Kelly was asked again, and well, listen, Wolf, he went there again.
It is what it is. Watched a couple guys, was able to get out of any, finally made one good pitch for the punch out.
Okay. Can we just leave that philosophy, by the way, to the guys who do brawl for a living?
What it is what it is.
Of course, just a reminder, anybody tries to charge the mound on Pauly Pintar, and you get the sawed-off shotgun of sports.
Knock it off, Joe Kelly.
Sports takes and another major league headache. Another one in Rob Manfred's direction, says Doug Glanville.
Well, baseball's got to step in right now, and they have to because this is pandemic baseball. You can't have a brawl. How this spreads and being in a scenario where now you're fighting for 5 minutes and yelling at each other, it's too risky. And that's still not going to satisfy the Los Angeles Dodgers.
You're right.
Joe Kelly.
Nothing funny in baseball right now. Calvisi Consulting says, forget Rob Manfred. They need to hire Derek Anderson as the front man.
I don't go out there and laugh. It's not funny. It's not fun. Nothing's funny to me.
Speaking of not funny in the Cardinals.
That's funny every time.
We had a question from the media yesterday to Cliff Kingsbury. Went something like this. Coach, what's the worst part of the virtual meetings? What do you lose virtually?
What I miss is the interaction. You'll tell a joke that you think is really funny, and it's just dead silence.
Nothing for you.
So you kind of it falls flat for you.
Wolf can relate to that. The crickets, you know. Finally. I didn't know Cliff was funny. How about that? Finally, Wolf has something in common with an NFL head coach. By the way, Wolf, agree or disagree, if the Cardinals start winning, you're going to see the side of Cliff Kingsbury that's hilarious. Dude is he's a funny
no
guy
doubt,
with
Pauly.
A dry
yes.
sense of humor.
Yes.
But right now the theme today is who else is most definitely not laughing?
Relax. We're going to be okay.
Aaron Rodgers on the Kyle Brandt podcast, and drum roll, please. The Packers quarterback finally revealing his reaction on draft night to the Packers taking Jordan Love round one, number 26 overall.
I was like, oh, wow, okay. I love scotch, but I've been drinking some sipping tequila lately as well.
Great.
Mm. Once I got that text, I went to the pantry. I poured myself, you know, about four fingers. And I knew it was going to be one of those nights where the people were going to start calling. And there's going to be, you know, hey, you know, everything fine? You okay? I'm like, yeah, fine.
Mm. Aaron Rodgers, were you really fine, or was that the four fingers of tequila talking?
Like I said, I wasn't elated by the pick, you know, especially being one game away from the Super Bowl and feeling like we're a couple players away. But at the same time, I understand it's business. I know that's a reality.
Yeah, the gravity of the situation, the reality check, right? That is a team drafting a player at your position in the first round, even when you're going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer.
I think that's probably what happens, you know, based on, you know, just the circumstances around everything. You know, you look at just look at the facts. You know, they traded up, they drafted him. I would say they like him, they want to play him.
Would you say Aaron Rodgers sounds motivated?
No.
No?
No, Paul. I
mean, he broke up with Danica Patrick recently.
I mean, is that why you're saying he's motivated, Paul?
I'm just saying the dude's all ball now. All of a sudden, no more of the Hollywood stuff, none of the relationship stuff. He's got a guy taking number one.
He'll
right
be in a relationship in 2 weeks, Paul.
You know,
I think he's disgusted, Paul. That's what I think he is.
I'm calling for a 50 touchdown season for A-Rod.
I guarantee. Yeah.
By the way, how did Cal not go to the Rose Bowl when they had Aaron Rodgers, Marshawn Lynch, DeSean Jackson on that team? And Lorenzo Alexander was on that team.
That's because they were all partying, Paul. Except for Zoe.
Yeah, we're going to rhyme Zoe.
The reason rhymes with Hedford.
Yeah, that's it.
Wrap this thing up.
It's time once again for No Comprendo.
Things that make us say
No Comprendo.
By the way, Jeff Tedford just went like 11-1 at Fresno State, by the way, Doug. Yeah. Headline in this Scottish Sun newspaper. Here it is. The headline reads, Going Ape. A safari wildlife park in England. Where we have some boorish behavior by the baboons.
Dilly dilly!
This is one of those wildlife parks where you can drive around, you can see the sights, like Bear Arizona and Williams, right?
Hey, look, kids, there's Big Ben and there's Parliament.
But if you pause or stop your car, look out for the primates at the park.
Baboons are known to instantly jump up on your car.
Dang nabbit.
Not to mention they've been known to tear off a windshield wiper side mirror at times.
You snotty little bastard.
Defecate, Paul.
But because it can always get worse, the baboons have recently been spotted with knives, screwdrivers, even a chainsaw.
No comprendo.
No, come on. The workers can't figure out, Doug, if people are giving them the weapons for a laugh. Maybe it's PETA. The activists are arming the baboons.
Fishy, fishy.
Other workers think that the baboons have jumped into the beds of pickup trucks, opened up toolboxes, and helped themselves. Either way, the baboons are armed, and it's pretty much a real-life version of Planet of the Apes right now.
No comprendo.
I don't know, but all of this is reminding me of the Paul's call when you talked about those hats on those birds. That was so wrong, but gosh, it was funny.
So we have primates battling humans with weapons.
I know the human being and fish can coexist peacefully.
Someday we can only hope.
Just go to Arizona, Paul. That'll be an eye-opener for you.
Better bring the
with a
shotgun to sports. That's Paul's call.
Thank you, Paul.
How did the show make you feel?
Woo. By the way, same mechanics in auto body shops.
Doug and Wolf's.
They've been making a killing in the area recently.
Brought to you by Carol Royce with Keller Williams Realty East Valley. Looking to buy a nice home and can't find one? Go to OurNiceHomes.com. That's OurNiceHomes.com.
I'll go first.
My big takeaway.
Go ahead, Doug.
My big takeaway from today's show is still those birds.
Stop it. That wasn't funny. Those hats were glued on. But also, here's what's not funny. The Suns are selling their G League team. With all the reduced revenues right now, I'm hoping that all of a sudden the first-round draft picks won't be for sale in the team shop again for $3 million apiece like back in the day.
Okay, Marc Gasol stuffing D.A. Dunk the ball! Peace and strength.
What does the white bird say? Hey, what's on your head?